Welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for all of you today. My guest will be Terry Meir. He's the Director of Sustainability at Kashi, which is an ashram down in Florida, and I'll tell you more about that when he comes on. But first, I want to talk to you about some things in the news, some ways you can take action and become an active citizen. And also, of course, I want to share my weekly recipe. So first, I want to talk about the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which was passed in New York State back in June. And this was a historical event. This Leadership and Community Protection Act will transition New York State off of fossil fuels and really have New York State be a leader in renewable energy and leadership. And yet, right now, they are trying to fill the council that will be making the judgments in how to go forward with this Protection Act. And recently, Republicans in both the Senate and the Assembly have selected representatives that represent the fossil fuel industry as opposed to the people and food activists and environmental activists. And so we really need to let our voices be heard before they fill this council with industry leaders who we know want the same status quo that's been going on and are going to do everything they can to thwart any efforts towards really cleaning up our act. So they are asking us all to send letters right now to our assembly people and senators and let them know that we really want good representation on this council. So I have a link on my website for that, and I'd like to ask you all to really check in this week and do that. It's so important that we all become active citizens. I mean, we have a president in the White House that is so ridiculous. He's actually, trying to get the weather people to change the weather to match what he says, as opposed to him saying what the weather people say. He is just, one thing after the next, He is, trying to undo anything good that the Obama administration has put in. Today we have more people without health coverage than we have had before. The Obama administration came in and, got health care to so many millions of people who didn't have it before. Well, it's going backwards. As the farm-to-school coordinator for my local public school, he's weakening the standards in the health, in the requirements for whole grains and fresh vegetables. So he's just undoing everything good, and we need to really stay diligent and become involved and do what we can to not let that happen. Coming up this weekend, there's so many great things that you may want to participate. Here in New York, out on Long Island, Stony Brook Southampton campus is having their fifth annual food lab, which has Lydia Bastinich as the keynote speaker and Adam Kopnik, who is a New York Times Magazine contributor, in conversation together as the keynote. And that should be really great. There's a cooking demonstration earlier in the day, starting on Friday, with Nicholas Plomidis. He's a Mediterranean chef, and he'll be doing a cooking demonstration from 2 to 4 on Friday. Then the opening reception's in the evening, Friday night, and then all day Saturday there's breakout sessions, healthy lunch, cooking demonstrations, and more breakout sessions in the afternoon. So it's a full day of conferencing and learning, and should be really exciting. So if you are available, that is something you definitely want to do. And then on Sunday, my local Slow Food chapter, we're hosting a fall harvest celebration at Elijah Farm, which is the farm we did another event in a couple months ago at the beginning of the season, and now we're going to do a farm tour so that people can see the difference between what the farm looked like at the beginning of the season with all these cute little baby seedlings and now what it looks like when it's really in full bloom and everything is ready for harvest. So that is on Sunday at 1 p.m. You can bring a dish to share. It's a potluck. Also bring your own plates and silverware because we're trying to make all of our events eco-friendly. So I hope you can make it there. Some other great things coming up. Saturday evening, Aucasti Farm, which is another wonderful farm that works with young adults on the spectrum. They are having an evening of expressive agriculture, although it's not quite evening. It's 4:30 to 7:30, so they can still make use of the light outside. But that should be really great. They have music lined up. They have some great speakers and a beautiful harvest meal. There's opportunities on Long Island to learn about electrical vehicles. You know, that's another area we want to transition to and try to get away from the fossil fuel automobiles that we all use. The first one's coming up September 16th at Sustainable Institute at Molloy, if you want to check that out. There are so many great events coming up. This season, it's always hard to talk about them all because there's just so many. But next week, on September 20th, there's a climate strike that is happening in New York City from 12 to 5, and Greta Thunberg, who is the young, inspiring Swedish girl who is really talking about climate change in such a passionate way that if you listen to her, you just think, how can we not do something? She's just amazing, and if you haven't heard her speak, she will be there in Foley Square. She just took a sailboat over here to attend the UN conference because she didn't want to fly here and contribute to the global warming. So she was in a boat for I don't know how long it took. But anyway, she's really an inspiration, and so this is going to be a great rally if you can make it on September 20th. September 22nd, Ellen Kamai, who is a guest on this radio show, she is having her annual Chinatown Herb Walk, which is just a wonderful event. If you've never really spent time in Chinatown, she knows all the ins and outs, and she can take you to some of the greatest herb shops and tea shops in Chinatown. And you can learn about the history in Chinese medicine, which is fascinating. It's hundreds and if not thousands of years old. It's been around much longer than homeopathy. And the Chinese herbs are just amazing. And so I learned so much on that tour last year, so I highly recommend it. And there's so many more things on my website of events. I don't want to take the time to go through all of them. One more I do want to mention, though, is September 26th, the Coalition for Healthy School Food, which is a wonderful nonprofit organization that is bringing plant-based food to so many schools across the country. They actually even have gotten three of New York City schools to become all vegetarian. They will be having their annual gala at the Academy of Medicine on September 26th, and I am one of many food vendors there serving plant-based food. So it's really a whole evening of sampling such delicious food, all plant-based. So, and you'll be supporting a wonderful nonprofit organization at the same time. So consider joining us there. Tickets are $100 for the early bird, if they're still available. I'm not sure. Otherwise, I think they go up to $125. But I hope to see you there. And now I want to share with you my weekly recipe. My garden is filled with poblano peppers, so this is the time of year where I need to create a recipe with poblano peppers. So these are stuffed poblano peppers with a cashew lime crema sauce that's just delicious. And it's all plant-based and gluten-free and delicious. So you're going to start with 10 large poblano peppers for stuffing. Just wash those and set those aside. Then you need one onion chopped, four small elongated red peppers, and that's what I'm pulling out of my garden. So these were not really hot peppers, but they were elongated. They almost looked like little poblano peppers in their shape. But anyway, you can use whatever peppers you want. I also am putting in two habanero peppers that I have growing in my garden, and those are really hot. So when you're cutting those, you do want to put on some rubber gloves. And then when you're finished cutting them, take those rubber gloves off and throw them out, because if you cut habanero peppers and then you touch your eye or any other part of your body, you will be in pain. So that's just a little food for thought. 2 cups of cherry tomatoes, which I also have growing up the wazoo in my garden. 8 ounces of baby portobello mushrooms. Those I don't grow, so I do go to the store to buy those. You can buy big portobello mushrooms if you prefer, but 8 ounces worth. 2 cups of chopped kale. 2 tablespoons of chopped garlic. 1.5 teaspoons of salt. 1/2 teaspoon of pepper. 1 can of black beans. 1 cup of frozen organic corn. Now, if you're lucky enough to have some fresh corn, of course, by all means, feel free to use that. 2 cups of cooked brown rice. 1 teaspoon of cumin, 1 teaspoon of chipotle powder, 1/2 teaspoon of smoked paprika, chopped parsley or cilantro for garnish. And if you are one of the people that don't like cilantro, use parsley. If you like cilantro, you can actually add extra cilantro to this recipe too. It's hard to overdo cilantro if you love cilantro. Go for it. And then for the cream sauce, you're going to soak 3 cups of cashews for 3 hours or more, and then you're going to drain them. And you're going to mix those 3 cups of cashews with 2 cups of water, the juice of 1 or 2 limes, depending on how much lime juice you like. I only had 1 lime at the time, so I also put in 3 tablespoons of organic lime juice that I have in a jar in the refrigerator. But fresh lime, of course, is the better choice if you have that. 1 teaspoon of chipotle powder and 1 teaspoon of salt. And that's just going to get blended up in a Vitamix. And you can do that right away and just set that aside, put it in the refrigerator. Some of it will go on the dish and some of it will be served on the side of the dish for people to just add on. And then you're going to make a little crumb topping for this dish as well, using 1/2 cup of unsweetened organic corn flakes that you're going to crush and 1/2 cup of crushed tortilla chips. I also organic crushed tortilla chips. So for the filling, you're going to start by sautéing the onion in olive oil until it's translucent. Add the garlic and the peppers and cook that for a few more minutes. Then you're going to add the spices along with the salt and pepper. Then add the mushrooms and the kale and cook it down for 5 more minutes until those are soft and incorporated. Then add all of the cherry tomatoes and continue cooking until those tomatoes have broken down, another 5 or 10 minutes. Then you're going to add the can of beans and the frozen corn. Now, if you're using fresh corn, you will want to cook that first, just a little bit. You can either cook it, you know, in some water or steam it and then take it off the cob, however you want. And then the brown rice you're going to also add to the pan and cook that all up and let the flavors really come together. If you are one of the people that likes cilantro, I'd add a handful of cilantro into this as well. And then you're going to stuff the peppers. So you're going to take the 10 poblano peppers and cut them in half, so you'll have 20 halves. Each person will probably eat one to one and a half peppers, depending on how hungry they are. And you're going to cut those in half, scoop out the seeds and the ribs from the peppers, and then just lay them out on a single layer in a baking dish or a roasting pan. That you can slightly spray to prevent it from sticking. And then fill each pepper with the filling. Pour 1/2 of the cashew cream over the peppers and sprinkle with the crushed crumb topping. And bake that in a 350-degree oven for about 40 minutes until the peppers are soft. If it looks like it's browning too much on the top, you can cover it with some tin foil or just lay a piece of parchment paper over the top. And then you're going to serve that with the remaining cashew lime cream. You can garnish it with some fresh parsley on top to, you know, add some green color. And that's it. Serve it with some rice on the side if you like, or some steamed broccoli or whatever you like. But it's really delicious, and, of course, I'd love hearing how you liked it when you cook it up. So please get back to me and let me know. And now it's my pleasure to tell you about my guest and introduce Terry Meir to all of you. I first met Terry last year, last winter when I was visiting the Kashi Ashram, which is in Sebastian, Florida. And it's one of the oldest intentional communities in the country. And I've been going there for over 40 years. You know, every few years I go down and visit. I have friends that have been living there for a long time. And I was always impressed with the communal food that they had there. They have, you know, opportunities where you can buy into the meal program and have food cooked for you, or you can just shop at the walk-in refrigerator and, you know, be a part of the food co-op buying thing. But one thing that was always missing was they weren't growing vegetables there. I never could figure it out. And I think it was just too big a project for anyone to take on until they met Terry Meir. And I met Terry this winter when I was there, and in the few years that I hadn't been there, he had transformed the landscape into a beautiful permacultural, live, floral space that had all these fruit trees growing, mango trees, avocado trees, cassava, as well as, you know, vegetable garden. And it was just amazing to see the transition that had happened since he's been there. And so I asked him at the time if he'd be willing to come into the studio and talk to us about permaculture and what he is doing at the Kashi Ashram. So, Terry, welcome.
Thank you, Bhavani. It's really nice to be here.
Thanks. So maybe you could share with us a little bit of your history first before we get into what you're actually doing at the Kashi Ashram.
Wonderful. Yes, I was born on a sailboat down in the Florida Keys. And that was a very unique way to enter the world because I was very connected to nature in most ways. I remember my childhood watching the weather patterns. That was my activity. So I had a lot of nature connection. And I started going to school in the fifth grade in Melbourne, Florida, and I realized nobody else had this connection. Everybody else was disconnected. They left the lights on. They were very unconscious with the nature around them. And I wanted to find a way to introduce that to people. So I was searching for a way to connect nature to people's lives, and I came across permaculture. So permaculture basically is a concept of relationships with the human life into nature's existence. And it's a way of designing, using the patterns of nature to create human abundant systems. So it's in searching for that, I was able to meet great teachers such as John Jevons. He's out in Willits, California. He did Ecology Action, where he took data of biointensive gardening and grew a lot of food in a little bit of space. So I was seeing the connection between organic, healthy food and abundant human life. So I started searching out teachers, and I went down to Costa Rica, down out to Hawaii, all the places that I saw were growing a lot of food and actually had connections to nature. So in that, I started teaching people how to grow their own food, started teaching people how to connect to nature, both in energy, water, food, and really started creating a movement in Orlando, Florida, to where people could create a connection with not only their food, but also the community around them. And so it's really brought me on a beautiful journey into this space of connection and now teaching people how to reconnect to the ecosystem.
Uh-huh. And can you share with us a little bit about the ashram where you're living? I know it's an intentional community. I think it's 80 acres. Can you tell us what you have growing there?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So in Orlando, Florida, I had a beautiful 5-acre project. It was called the Econ Farm. It was a log cabin that I had built. It was actually featured in Oprah Magazine. It was quite a beautiful article on people that willingly simplified their lives. And the project was beautiful. It had organic gardens. It had solar power. It had water catchment. But I felt it was always missing something. It always had something that wasn't there. And I finally realized that this missing piece was community. So it was a beautiful piece, but it was always a single-family home. It never had a connection to others. And I was brought to Kashi through Susei Cho, which was Mahajaya Sati's Bhagavati's son. And he was the one who actually, him and family members, started the Sustainable Kashi movement. So Kashi is a community that was started back in 1976. So it's 43 years, now, and just a beautiful place built on the foundations of love and kindness and the teachings of Ma Jaya. So I was brought in to continue the work of Sustainable Kashi, which wanted to bring ecology and the environment into this sense of community. So when I came in, I started 9 different gardens, and each garden has a different growing style. And what we do is we record the inputs and the yields of each garden. So we can actually measure how much food you can grow in a finite space with so many inputs. And it's really become a wonderful space for demonstration and education. So all the gardens are designed for a family of 4. So we're not trying, because we have almost 100 people that live at Kashi, we're not trying to grow enough food for everyone. That would be a very large task. So what I've done was created these 9 gardens where people can see how they can do it for themselves. And so in these gardens, we have over 300 fruit trees. And these were the initial plantings from the people from Susei Cho, from Kwan Mei, and Peter Turner, all just planted trees. And they planted every kind of tree you can imagine.
So those were planted before you got there?
They were planted, well, I would say about 220 were planted before I got there, and then I've put in about another 80 since I've been there. And we're not even beginning to slow down, but they're all coming into maturity now. So one of our largest harvests is off of the fruit trees. We're finding the perennial forests are our largest food production. Mm-hmm. That takes the least amount of work, and we're getting the most production. So I highly recommend perennial forests in all installations. So we have avocados. We have 4 different kinds of avocados. We have 12 different kinds of mangoes. We have Asian pears. We have cherries. We have macadamia nuts. We have the list is pretty endless. And what we've done is we've stagger planted the varieties. So our mango season goes almost 6 months. So we have half the year with mangoes with different varieties. And avocados as well, we've got them up to about 4 months of mangoes, avocados. So it's a lot of variety selection. And then in the annual gardens, we plant pretty all the typical market gardens, all the market vegetables with broccolis, cauliflowers. Now, we are in Florida, so it's very interesting because our season is opposite of the rest of the country, to where our season starts in October and we end in June. And it's kind of fun traveling in the summer because I see everybody else's seasons really peaking when we're pretty much in our summers. We plant mostly sweet potatoes, cassava, and very heat-tolerant crops.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I would guess it's too hot in the summer for anything like lettuce or any greens like that. Uh-huh. Now, I know you also, when we were talking, you were talking about the inner landscape. Can you touch on what you mean by inner landscape?
So this is a concept. I took my permaculture teacher training with Dave Jackie. He's the co-author of Perennial Vegetables, a fantastic author and teacher. And he really brought the concept of the inner landscape to me. And this is, if we think of our life as a movie, the inner landscape would be the bulb, what is projecting the light. Because ultimately, how we think is going to create the world around us. And if we have negative thoughts or thoughts of fear and scarcity, those are going to appear in the world around us. So the idea is to create and manifest an inner garden of peace, tranquility, whatever it is that you would like to see in your life, and that you will nurture that into your life around you. So it's really become quite a extensive study for me. In permaculture, this is called the Zone 00. So permaculture likes to separate the gardens by frequency of use. So Zone 5 would be the zones furthest from you, such as the wild forest. This is not something you would go harvest from. It'd be something you would go look at and learn from, to observe, to find tranquility in. Zone 4 might be a planted food forest, such as a wood lot or a nut lot, to where you would go get firewood or timber or certain other fruit trees. Zone 3 gets more into your orchard, food forest, and as you get closer, you're going to get more frequent use, until Zone 1 is basically right outside your doorstep, your lettuce, your fresh basil, something that you don't even have to put your socks on to go outside. And then Zone 0 is your home. So this is where you spend most of your time, you find your inspiration. In Zone 0-0, which is one of the newer concepts in permaculture, is the inner landscape, that which creates all the thoughts from the world around you. And so I've been spending time cultivating that. It's kind of a prequel to most of the permaculture concepts that have been out there. A lot of the permaculture books work with systems, how to catch your own water, how to grow your own food. And I think one of the biggest misconceptions of permaculture is that it is an agricultural science. And it's not just agriculture. Food is an extremely important part of it, but there's other parts as well. And the inner landscape, I truly believe if we don't develop our inner landscape, our outer landscape will begin to fail.
Mm-hmm. How familiar are you with biodynamics, and does biodynamics come into permaculture? Because I know in the philosophy of Rudolf Steiner, where he will talk about, you know, so much of the garden has to do with rhythms and connecting those rhythms to astrological rhythms that are, you know, planetary rhythms. You know, paying attention to the moon and obviously the seasons, but, you know, to the moon and to the sun and, you know, time of day of harvesting and, you know, different, he even gets into the different parts of the vegetable, whether it's a root vegetable, a leaf vegetable, you know, and the different nutritional values and energies in those different foods. Does your work and permaculture get into any of that?
Great question. Absolutely. Yes. The work I see with Rudolf Steiner, and I did begin with Rudolf Steiner, was intention. And the power of intention is unmeasurable. I've seen the crystal dust pesticides used and the totems frequently used in biodynamic farming. And I saw a study where people were using totems in the garden, and they could see a remarkable growth increase.
Can you backtrack? What is a totem?
It could be like a statue, a basic.
Oh, a totem.
A totem, exactly.
A totem pole. Okay.
there is no code, but he has a very specific way of building them. At least he's written about these. And I've seen other people just make totems out of things they have around, and it has equal effects. So the point is the intention and what we put into our food, because there's a relationship, I think an innate relationship, that goes way deeper than and longer than we've ever known and that we've kind of forgotten. And when we connect to that relationship with our food, it wants to talk to us. If we try and connect to nature, nature does listen.
And what's the intention of a totem?
It's basically companion, protection.
To scare the birds away, too?
A scarecrow, absolutely. Right. It can have many, many functions. And that's the beautiful part of gardening, is it's a reflection of our inner landscape. I've seen moon gardens where we just celebrate the moon. I've seen flower gardens where we celebrate pollinators. I've seen all these different themed gardens, and the gardens reflect the inner landscape of the individual that's cultivating them.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. You know, I've always been attracted to biodynamics and the work of Rudolf Steiner, so that really speaks to me. You want to talk a little bit about the community at Kashi and how growing the food has changed people's relationship with their diet, and has it improved their eating habits at all?
Yes. Let me start with talking about an ashram. A lot of your listeners may not understand what an ashram is. And I've always looked at an ashram as a place of learning. Usually has a spiritual or religious foundation. And Kashi is such an amazing place because it's rooted in love and kindness. That's the glue holding it all together. And the spirituality isn't determined. It's interfaith. So anyone, you can believe anything as long as it's rooted in love and kindness and find a home there. So the community is quite amazing. I've spent many years traveling to intentional communities, mostly looking for communities that are over 30 years old, and finding the similarities, finding how they are successful. And I have to say, Kashi is the most successful long-term community I've seen. And I believe that's because of the interfaith aspect that's rooted in love and kindness. So as long as the community treats each other well, then it works. And that's a beautiful concept. I'd love to see more of that in society today, of just treating each other really well. There's a saying at Kashi that people come for the spirituality, but they stay for the food. We are really lucky to have one of the most amazing chefs at Kashi, Swami Rudradas. He's spent decades dedicated to preparing food, and it comes out as blessed food, as prasad. And it's when you eat this food, there's no way I could describe it. So one of my favorite memories is walking out to the gardens and seeing our chef in the gardens, just kneeling down, picking this food, and every leaf that he would pick was like this mantra, this blessing of intensity and intention. And he would turn that food into some of the most amazing meals. And I talked to him, and he said it's like he had been renewed in his inspiration with his relationship with the food. So just to see the chef connect to the food in that way was worth everything. But then the people are actually starting to come out into the gardens and harvest, and everyone is just connecting to that, to the land. And Kashi has always been very rooted in causes and very rooted in change, political change, social change. They're very active in the AIDS movement, and there's just a lot of social justice happening at Kashi. So to move the environment onto that stage has just been very powerful. And now we're seeing more and more environmental activism work, and Kashi's get a breath of life in working for the planet.
Mm-hmm. When we were talking earlier, I was asking how you managed to do it all, and you were sharing with me that you have some programs in place that really help you. And so I really want to ask you some questions about the internship programs that you have, but let's take a couple-minute break first, and when we come back, then maybe you can share with us some of those programs. Everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Terry Meir from Kashi Ashram, and you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green. Be right back.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information. The kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one Progressive Radio Network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis. will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm sitting here with my guest, Terry Meir. He is the Director of Sustainable Kashi at Kashi Ashram in Sebastian, Florida. And he's doing a whole permaculture thing there, and it's just really exciting. And before the break, I was asking him how he manages to do it all, and he was sharing with me that he actually has an internship program. So, Terry, can you tell us a little bit about your internship program and how you recruit helpers and how that all works?
I'd love to. So I was once doing an interview, and I was asked, how do you make time to do all this? How do you make time to grow your own food and till the gardens and catch your own water? And without even thinking, I answered is like, there is no making time. It becomes your life. And when it becomes your life, a lot of the other things kind of fall away. So it's really interesting to be in that existing, and it's so rewarding to be able to produce and create your own food, water, energy. So what I've done is I've understood the value of this and the absolute human potential that is important for all of us to reach this connectivity back to nature. So I've created a program, a three-week program, in which people can come in and actually live life completely connected to nature. This is, they live in our off-grid eco-village. So this is an area that has an outdoor kitchen creating solar power. We have a methane biodigester that creates all of our gas for cooking. This system actually takes food scraps, breaks it down, turns it into methane gas, and we can use that gas to cook on. So the idea is that the food we cook creates the gas on that we cook on.
I know methane is, you know, one of the biggest contributors to global warming. You know, it's the gas that's like three times worse than CO2. So when you cook with methane gas, are you releasing the gas into the atmosphere and it has a negative impact, or are you burning the gas and it's not going into the atmosphere?
Right. No, we're actually capturing the gas before it escapes into the atmosphere and burning it so it's not a CO2 or not a...
Doesn't impact the environment.
Correct. Uh-huh. Thank you. So, and also in this system, it creates an effluent, which is a nitrogen-rich fertilizer. So we're actually taking food scraps that would end up into a landfill, turning that into cooking fuel to create more food scraps, and then the effluent from the system is growing the food in which we cook to create the whole system. So we've actually created systems that feed themselves and then produce, their waste becomes an input for another system. So we're creating abundant systems, and this is how we really create abundance in the ecosystem, in the eco-village. So from the rainwater catchment, this is all the water from the roof comes down, it gets collected into a cistern, and that's where we wash all our dishes. So we have water that comes, gets used as a dishwashing area. The runoff, the gray water from that actually feeds an aquatic system, which grows vegetable leaf taro. So we're growing food by washing our dishes. All the systems are connected, creating abundance. So nothing is wasted. One of the key concepts in permaculture is there is no such thing as waste. If you're wasting something, there's a misuse somewhere. So we have a garbage can in the eco-village, And the idea is that every three-week cycle, we only empty that garbage can once. If we don't, then we're looking at the system of how we can eliminate things. And it's we've gone 6 months without emptying the garbage can. So it's really impressive to see people, especially younger people, come in and from a very screen-rich
consumer
disconnected lifestyle, and all of a sudden they're in community where they're in the soil growing their own food. They're talking to each other about, you know, things they want, things they need, what brings them joy in their lives, and they're a part of this 42-year-old intentional community where they can see the power of community, interconnectivity of everything. And this is an experience that has changed many people's lives. So we're currently taking about 35 people a year in order to run them through this program. And it's a powerful, powerful effect on people's lives.
And how much are they actually integrated into the community? When I was there visiting, you showed me the Eco Village, and it was so cool. But it is somewhat separated from the rest of the community. Do these four people come and join with the community meals and take advantage of that great chef, or are they cooking all their meals separately? Can they use the bathroom in the guest houses, or they're only using the compostable bathroom out in the Eco Village? How does that work?
Yes. So, of course, they are given the opportunity to use the quote-unquote regular toilet, but honestly, the experience is to use the composting toilet because that is a whole avenue into, it's not just the system, but the inner landscape, the mindset. And this shift, remember this shift happened for me actually sitting on the composting toilet. Mm-hmm. And I don't get to tell this story too often. So I was sitting there and I felt really good, right? I'm feeling I'm not wasting drinking water. I'm not, it's not going to a sewer plant having chemicals put on it. This is getting turned into food for our fruit trees. So this is actually part of the fertility cycle. And I was feeling really good about that. And then my mind kept going. I was like, this is what we're doing in society. If we have people that we don't feel are productive or useful, we'll maybe medicate them, put chemicals on them, and then if they're really not productive, maybe we'll put them in a prison, put them in a little cell somewhere, and it's the same thing we're doing to our waste. And so I've seen how we can actually use these systems used in permaculture that create regenerative systems and move those into a social setting and actually make those parallels, and it's quite powerful. So the eco-volunteers, that we call them, are completely integrated into the community. They have morning meditations, there's yoga, there's all these activities in which not only are they encouraged, we really enjoy because they add to the entire event. So it's the separation and isolation has really kind of, we try and take that away and really integrate and involve everyone into all aspects of the community.
Sounds dreamy. Really great. Now, what happens with the waste from a compostable toilet? How does that work? Because you usually don't think of human waste as something that you can use into compost.
Yes, there's a wonderful book called Humanure. And this is basically the whole process. There's many processes, and basically in dealing with human compost, you're looking at pathogens, and that's the most thing to be aware of. So what we do is we actually keep it in bins for 1 year before we do anything with it. And at that point, we'll put it, we'll bury it by our fruit trees. And that, so everything's underground, nothing's ever above ground or exposed, and the fruit trees draw it up. And I have personal experience of putting the humanure on banana trees, and you can't buy a fertilizer more effective.
But you have to wait a year first.
We wait a year just for safety. It's all, there's a relationship between heat and time. So you could either go really hot in shorter time or longer time, lower heat, and that's just to eliminate the pathogens involved. So we bury all of ours subterranean in our food forest with our fruit trees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to do that with, you know, the horse manure that I get delivered here. You know, I have to wait 6 months But, you know, you want to let it get hot enough, and, you know, and that's, of course, for the cross-contamination aspect of it.
And with human manure, there's pathogens as to where horses don't quite create the same potential problems.
Ah, interesting. So when we were talking earlier, you also were talking about sacred ecology. Is that the same thing as inner landscape, or can you talk to us a little bit what's different about sacred ecology?
So sacred ecology is basically a model that I use for putting nature back into the human life. We have become very adept, very skilled at separating ourselves from nature. And I was on a walk one day and with this young lady, and we were getting ready to walk into the woods, and she was like, "I'm so afraid of nature." And it's just this overwhelming realization in me that we have actually separated ourselves from the very nature around us. And we're afraid of the dirt. And that, so I realized that there is a connection to reestablish. And sacred ecology is a framework in which we can build that bridge between ecology and the sacred heart. Because I've been to permaculture farms where there was more food than you could possibly eat. There was so much abundance in materials and food, but maybe the people weren't completely grounded in their purpose, or maybe they weren't, you know, completely happy. And then I've been to ashrams where these people were so spiritually flourished. There, you could see the smiles on their faces. They were happy, but maybe there was Miracle-Gro on the flowers and bleach down the drains. So there was a disconnection between the abundance of the land and the abundance of the heart. And this is basically the work of sacred ecology, to bring that inner landscape to a point of abundance to match the abundance of the landscape around us.
Great. And I was curious as to how have you seen a change in the eating habits since the garden and the permaculture aspect of Kashi has flourished? Have the people living in the community started paying more attention to what they're eating? How has it trickled down?
So yes, this abundance is contagious. And I remember when I was building the log cabin, I was in a very rural area. The neighbors didn't really talk to each other. So what we did was we started a chicken coop, a community chicken coop with our next door neighbor, to where we'd both take care of the chickens and everybody would get the eggs. And that was a social experiment, because next thing you know, he would see our garden, he started a garden. And then the neighbor saw his garden and they started a garden. And by the time I left that neighborhood, there were more gardens in people's yards than not. So this has definitely happened at Kashi. The people are definitely eating the food from the gardens and preparing lunches for each other. I've seen the entire culture shift into a more environmental conscious, such as tablecloths, reusable tablecloths. Now we're actually having meetings on how can we become more sustainable and become a not only spiritual model and example, but also environmental and an example for the world on a regenerative, intentional community.
Mm-hmm. And during the summer, I know you said you take 3 months off and you travel and you go to other intentional communities and see what other people are doing. But this summer, I know you also, you know, locked yourself up in a cabin up in New Hampshire to write or try to finish your book. Can you tell us a little bit about the book you're writing?
I'd love to, yes. Actually, I am done with my book, and I'm in the editing phase. So,
congratulations.
Oh, my goodness. This is such a wonderful place. This is a four-year project I've been working on, and I've been so busy doing it, I haven't been able to actually write it. So I did lock myself in New Hampshire up in Conway and wrote. And I wrote, I finished everything. I'm very excited. The book is called Simple as That, and it's basically a toolbook and to teach people how to cultivate that inner garden and expand it out into the garden around them. So it's like I say, it's a prequel to all the gardening books you've ever read. So it's really exciting to be able to put these teachings down that have been successful for me in building community, abundance, and a lifestyle that is connected to nature and the ecosystem around us.
Mm-hmm. And if people are interested in coming and visiting you at Kashi before making a commitment of a 3-week situation, is that a possibility?
Yes, there's always events. We have many different gatherings at Kashi, so everybody's welcome to come. We have 45 beds available for people to stay at, and it's. I would recommend coming on a Saturday night and come joining us for dinner. It's quite an amazing. It's a vegetarian community, so we have some of the best organic food I think you can get in the Southeast. But yes, you can find all of our information at kashi.org, and then you can get a lot of information on Sustainable Kashi at sustainablekashi.com.
That's great. And for those that, you know, might be scared off by the word ashram, you know, I just want to share that, you know, Jaya Sati, or she was known as Joya when I joined the group. She was a teacher, and you know, and for many people, they would consider her their guru. But she passed away a few years back. How many years ago?
Six years ago.
And so now it's the community really passing on her teachings. But you should know her teachings are those teachings of Nim Karoli Baba, who is the same guru as Ram Dass's guru. So it's all under Nim Karoli Baba's blanket. And that's, you know, that's who I consider my guru. And his basic teaching was love everyone, feed everyone, and remember God. And as Terry said, God could be whatever you believe. God could be nature. God could be trees. God could be, you know, whatever religious background you have. It's all welcome there. And there really is no dogma that's being followed at Kashi Ashram. Everyone comes as their own individual. And as long as you're living in harmony with the community and in a loving space, you're right on. You know, you're good there. So it's not like you have to follow any meditation rules or yoga rules or anything like that. Although he did say, you know, the space is a vegetarian community, so, you know, people aren't eating meat there, although, you know, I'm sure there's people that will bring in a turkey sandwich and, you know, and enjoy that at their own table. So there's really room for everything there, but it really is one of the most gorgeous places in this country. I have to say, I've traveled a lot, and it is such a beautifully laid out. I mean, there's a beautiful pond with all these little temples around. It's just gorgeous. And, you know, I really recommend people visiting it because it's just really special. So what else would you like to share with us before we're almost out of time? But I would like you to just tell us anything else that you feel like I haven't asked you about permaculture or about the ashram or about the work that you're doing.
Yes, I definitely agree. Everyone is welcome to come to Kashi. It, our belief is we are an oasis for every heart. So we like to be a place to heal and really connect people to each other, to the ecosystem. So I'm most excited about being able to connect people to each other, getting people with their hands in the dirt, people collecting their own water. And I think that once you contact this, once you feel that connection to the earth, it's really hard to go back. And we have quite a few people come in for the 3-week program, leave, and they quit their jobs and just go in a whole new direction because it's the importance of that feeling of connection is just so amazing. So definitely I would love for anyone to come out, check us out, and enjoy the beauty that is Kashi.
And is there a fee for this 3-week training class?
No, it's a 3-week program is actually free. We have limited spaces available. Currently we're filled until February. And it's a work exchange. So you just come and your price for admission is actually being involved in the program. So it's really an a gift to the community to be able to offer this experience to people, to reconnect to the ecosystem, and really understand the beauty of nature.
Well, Terry, thank you so much for joining us and sharing what you do with all of my listeners. It's really a special place, and it's a gift. Like I said, you know, I've been going there for so long, and it was the piece that was missing. You know, as someone who's been so committed to growing my own food and eating well and trying to be as conscious of my use of paper and plastic and water waste and everything, it's really refreshing to see that now being taken up by the whole community. So thank you so much for your work. And thank you to everyone out there who's been listening with us. I enjoy every week being here with you and sharing my guest with you, and I hope you all have a great rest of the week. I hope to see some of you out at the Food Lab or at this Slow Food North Shore Potluck, and have a great rest of the week. Bye for now.